So I guess I blame Thomas Edison. 1879, and he invented the what? Light bulb. Well, interesting enough, of course, you have to do your research. So I did a little research, and it turned out that there's a lot of confusion. Was it Thomas? Was it somebody else? Who got there first? But regardless, 1879, the light bulb arrives. Electric light, and it transforms our lives. I don't think we actually get how transformational light and the ability just to be able to flick a switch is. Now think about it. You know, this time of year, the sun goes down, and yet we're still there at work, able to do things because we just turn on the lights and everybody just carries on working. And then when you decide to leave work and you hop downstairs into the car, flick a button and the lights come on. And you drive down dark little roads, and then suddenly you come to one of the towns and there's street lights everywhere and it's all lit up and you can see. And then you get home and it's a blaze of lights as you pull up. We're just so used to having light. I can't think of the last time when the lights just went. You know, when that moment when you wake up in a power cut and you're thinking, oh no, the lights are off. It's all right. I've got a torch. If I can only find it, of course, but I've got a torch. Yeah? We're so used to this thing of just being able to click, switch or whatever, and the lights just come on. Of course, it would have been completely different for the Israelites, for the people living in those days. You see, they really understood the value of light. You know, we don't do dark these days. It just doesn't seem to happen. There's light everywhere we look. But for them, it was completely different. The sun would go down. As they saw it dipping towards the horizon, everybody would scurry for the towns and cities before they closed the gates at nightfall. They get back to their houses and they go through the dark streets and find their way home to the house. And there may be a cooking fire there, a little glow in the darkness in the corner as they cook some food. And then as the fire went down, they go to bed because they couldn't do anything because the light was gone. Or maybe to find their way around the house in the dark, they'd light a little oil lamp, the wick. A little yellow flame would just gutter away in the darkness as they tried to find their way around their house and put the family to bed. And the shepherds up in the hills would be looking down and trying to understand where the villages were, and they'd look for those little glistens of light in the darkness that would tell them where the villages were and things like that, because they knew what it was to be in complete darkness. And they really understood the value of light. They never took it for granted in the way that we did. Maybe it's no surprise that as we look through the Old Testament, again and again, the Bible equates God's presence with light. You know, you look at Moses in Egypt, and when he gets there and he's doing the plagues and the signs to impress Pharaoh and show him God's power, and in one of those, God sends darkness over the land for 3 days. And yet there is one area which has light. And that's where the Israelites are. That area is light. Everywhere else in the land is dark. As the Israelites leave, as they go out on the Exodus, and how are they going to be guided going out? And God sends a column, a pillar of smoke during the day, and at night, a pillar of fire to guide them, show them God's presence. David writes in the Psalms and he says, "You, Lord, are a lamp. You are my light and salvation." If you look at the prophets, all the way through the prophets, you see again and again, the prophets are saying, God is like light. So maybe it comes as no surprise when we get to this passage in the New Testament and we find that John uses that same analogy. Let's turn to this passage. John 1. We're going to be taking those verses from verse 4 down to verse 8. In him was life, and that life was the light of all mankind. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. John uses exactly that same idea of light. And he says, sorry, have we got, Billy, have we got PowerPoint or not? Is it there? I'm clicking. It's going to be one of those, isn't it? Let me do the little battery thing. We always do with your remotes at home, isn't it? Yeah. Rub the batteries together. That probably makes them work a bit. There we go. Let's try that. Hey, there we go. Light of the world. In him was life. And that life was the light of all mankind. Now, last week, you're looking at the beginning bits there. Okay. And John starts off in the beginning with the Word. And he compares Jesus to a word. And now he switches analogy and he starts to talk of him as being like light. What do you get compared to? Anybody done comparison stuff with you? Oh, you're very like. I was on a conference thing once and they did this kind of thing and they said, okay, in your little groups, yeah, with your work colleagues, I'd like you to look at your work colleagues and if they were an animal, what animal would they be? My work colleagues thought long and hard about this and decided that I was a red setter. Boundless enthusiasm, not much intelligence. Which was nice. But you get comparisons. People say, you're like this or you're like that. Okay? John says, Jesus is like light. Jesus is like light. That seems a really odd comparison. We're very used to it as an idea. We talk about Jesus as being light, as like light. But why? There's good reasons for Jesus being compared to light. See, the light shows us the danger we are in. One of the things about light is you shine it there to show you where the problems are, to reveal what's going on. Okay? And it helps you understand when you are in a dangerous situation. Sorry, you know me, climbing analogy coming up. So I talked about Joe Simpson before, okay? He's the guy that had the rope cut on him in the Alps, for those that in the Andes, for those that know the story. Okay, great story about this climber. But that wasn't the first real adventure he had. He'd had more before that. And I can remember reading a report he wrote of a climb in the Alps. He and his climbing friend were going up something called the Bonatti Pillar, which is a classic climb in the Alps. Real horrible bit of granite. And they've been climbing all day and they got near the summit. And they realised they weren't going to get the final pitches done in time. And so they decided to sleep overnight on the pillar. And they found a ledge. I'm guessing from their description it's probably, you know, about that. So they stuck their bums on the ledge and they sat there literally with just their backsides on this ledge, pulled some sleeping bags over them. And then to stop themselves pitching forward in the night, they strung a rope from one side to the other and kind of hooked their arms over this rope and fell asleep. I can't believe they do that. Well, they do that and they fell asleep. Yes, of course you would. A good night's rest in that situation. But these are climbers. They're used to it. They fell asleep. In the middle of the night, there's a sudden rumbling sound. And Joe, as he writes about it, says they wake up and instantly realize something's up. There's this huge, great rumbling sound and the rope under their armpits has gone tight. Joe manages to get his arm up and turn the head torch on and then looks around to understand their situation. He finds to their horror that the ledge they were sitting on is gone. This bit of rock has just collapsed and dropped away down the mountain. They are now hanging on this bit of rope that they put up. And so he looks to his right and he looks to his left and he can see that where this is put into the rock, it's starting to pull out. He and his colleague hang completely still for the rest of the night, not moving, just keeping still. In the morning, they're spotted and a helicopter comes up and manages to get them off from the cliff face. See, when he writes that, you get this horrible moment when he turns on the light and he looks around and he realizes the ledge is gone and the supports are failing. See, sometimes light shows us the danger that we are in. It reveals the problem. See, we like to think that everything's fine. That's that little lie that we do to ourselves. Everything's going on reasonably okay. Okay, you know, we're all right. We're coping. It's a bit up and down at times and things like that, but generally we're all right. And then the light comes and reveals the mess we're actually in. That's why Jesus is like a light. Jesus comes into our lives and says, actually, let me show you exactly where you are with God. Because if you're not a believer, you are separated from Him completely. You're lost. And you have no way of saving yourself. That's the true situation. We like to fool ourselves that we're getting on fine. But Jesus comes as a light and He says, let me show you exactly where things stand. He comes as a light to reveal. So the other way that Jesus is like a light is a light can guide us to safety. Again, I guess it comes back to a mountain one. I guess I use mountains because, quite simply, those are areas where they're pretty dark. I've been up in the mountains in the middle of the night and it is pitch black. And I can remember coming out from a hut and we were going up this summit and there had been a number of people coming out about the same time. It was 2 or 3 in the morning. We're going off to climb this summit. And I stopped as I came out thinking I didn't know the route, just trying to work out where we were going. And I looked up and in the night, you could see all the other groups that had come out. And it was a lovely sight. It was in the snow and you could see these little bobbing head torches as people walked up ahead of me. And I actually followed their route up the mountain, following these little bobbing head torches going up. And we think of a light as being something that guides us. I know when they had that song, My Lighthouse, came out, I know there are people that struggle with that. And they said, well, lighthouses are made to stand on rocks and protect ships from crashing into them. It's not really a good analogy, is it? No, but actually, if you've ever been out at sea, lighthouses are a guide. I've been out there at dusk trying to come into a harbour that had a light on the end of the quay. And it was wonderful because as the night was going down and you start to lose all the definition of where the land is and where the harbour is, those lights are absolutely crucial because it is the light that guides you into the harbour. It's the light that brings you in safe. And the light guides us to safety. And that's what Jesus is saying. He's saying, look, when John says Jesus is a light, he's saying He comes here to reveal the state that we are in and reveal the problem, but also not just to show the problem. He's there to guide us home. He has come so that we may know His Father, that we may go to heaven. Jesus is the light that can guide us to safety. There's only one light. That life was the light of all mankind. There is only one light. See, we live in an age when people are quite happy to go, well, Christianity, that's great for you, but not for me. We live in an age where people like to think there's a number of ways of living your life and getting to God and doing these things. You've got your way, I've got mine. The Bible is clear. It says, no, there is only one light. Jesus was the light of all mankind. There aren't multiple lights that you follow. There's one light that guides you to heaven. American preacher Aidan Tozer wrote this. Jesus is not one of many ways to approach God. Nor is He the best of several ways. He is the only way. When John writes this, in Him was life, and that life was the light of all mankind, he tells us Jesus is like a light. He comes to show us the danger we are in. He comes to guide us and lead us to God, and He is the only way. And John carries on. He says, the light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. See, there's something remarkable about this light. And again, I think it's something that we in our modern society don't really get. This idea of the darkness overcoming the light. Because, you know, think about it. When was the last time you changed a bulb in your house? Not that often, is it? I can remember when I was growing up, bulbs would just go kind of like every day. There was a bulb, it's gone again. These days, with our LED bulbs, they tend to last forever, it seems. And we have to change them quite infrequently. But back in that society, they knew what happened to lights. You see, the thing is if you just got a little oil lamp with a wick, you know that all lights fade and fail. Lights go out. That's what the Israelites knew about light. Light fades. Lights fail. Jesus doesn't. This light will never be overcome. This light will never fade and never fail. You see, you can put your trust in a lot of things. You can say, my life is defined by the fact that I've got my friends. I've got power. I'm well known. I've got money. Politics will save me, surprisingly. My position in society. You can put your trust in many things and say, this is what's important. This is the basis of my life. But the Bible says all of that will fade. All of that will fail. Only Jesus. The life he brings will never be overcome. He brings light into our lives, and he redeems and saves us. And that is the only light that will never fade and never fail. And we need to know that. There's these kind of promises in the Bible that sometimes we need to come back to and remind ourselves of again and again, that the darkness has not overcome that light. Because I can tell you, each and every one of us here in this room will go through times where we walk the darkest path. It may be right now. Maybe that coming here this morning was a really hard decision because you are currently walking the darkest path. It may be that you can remember a time when things were really tough. And it may be that there's some time to come. But each and every one of us will go through that. We'll be in that situation where everything else seems to fade and fail. And we need to hold on to this promise. The darkness does not overcome. If you're a believer, remember that. Jesus comes as light into the world to guide you. When you walk through that dark path, he is there. I didn't know they were going to be showing that video. I knew they were, but not the content of it. But that was really humbling to watch, to see that lady's faith and that her son's faith as well. But when we go through the dark parts of our lives, that they turn to God and say, he is there for me, because the darkness has not overcome him, and it never will. If you're not a believer here this morning, thank you so much for coming. I recognize how hard it is to walk into a church if you're not a believer. But there's fantastic news for you this morning as well. Because you're worried at the moment, because I've been talking about this light shining into your life, and you're thinking, that sounds really scary. Because I really don't want a light shone in my life in that way. Let me encourage you, because every single other person in this room who is a believer has gone through exactly that experience. We became Christians because suddenly God shone a light in our lives and said, here's where you stand. And we went, I do not want that. I want to be with him. I want him to guide. You're coming here this morning, and I'm telling you what's happening is that God is shining a light in your life, but he is also saying, I am here to guide you. I'm here to bring you home. And all that other stuff in your life that you put your trust in, that will fade. That will fail. But I will not, says Jesus. The light will never be overcome. I love how this passage carries on. Verse 4 and verse 5. Let me read it. In him was life, and that life was the light of all mankind. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. There was a man sent from God whose name was John. What a real contrast that is, isn't it? It's just been talking about Jesus. It's just been talking about how incredible he is, that he's this light that comes into the world. And then it completely switches. Completely switches, and it says, there was a man sent from God whose name was John. I don't know how you picture the people in the Bible. It's quite nice these days because they don't give me pictures in my Bible, so I can kind of do a mental image. When I was younger, they obviously did have pictures, which kind of force you down certain lines of thought. But it's quite nice now. I have mental pictures of what people are going to be like, and quite looking forward to heaven when I'm going to meet them and see if they fit in with that. Moses, for some reason, always pictured him with a great big beard. Don't know why. Always that kind of huge great big beard on Moses. Always thought of him like that. John the Baptist. That's who they're talking about here when he says whose name was John. John the Baptist. How do you imagine him? I always get him as this slightly crazy guy. Those kind of eyes that just... passionate guy. Yeah? He was an amazing guy. I'm really looking forward to meeting him. He must have been some preacher. Yeah? He must have been some amazing preacher because he preaches out in the desert. It's not a great place to preach. Yeah? You can imagine the conversation in Jerusalem. What do you think about this afternoon? I thought we'd go and hear John the Baptist. Hang on, wait a minute. That's a 2-hour walk down to the river and we sit there in 40-degree heat. Yeah, but he's good. He must have been some amazing preacher, this guy. We get this idea of what he's like. You see, John was someone people wanted to hear. And of course, there's a danger with that, isn't there? See, John's someone that people want to hear, and he starts to gather this crowd. And these days, we talk about the cult of the celebrity, yeah? When suddenly someone's doing something great, but everybody kind of gathers around, and suddenly they just like the fame. They just like having people gather around and listening to them, and that would be the temptation for John. There would have been this idea that maybe people had come to hear about him. But it's this contrast that we see here because we've just been talking about Jesus, the Son of God. And then it switches and it says, there was a man sent from God. You see, the thing about John is he was just an ordinary man, just an ordinary person like you and me. You see, John needed the light in his life as much as you and I need it. He needed Jesus like everybody else. Jesus needed to come into his life, reveal the mess he was in. And John needed salvation. He needed to be guided by Jesus as well. And what I find remarkable about John is that he had this role to play. You see, he was a guy that was talented, that could do so many things, and yet he turns around and he says, my role here is to point to someone else. You know, those road signs when you're driving down the motorway, and there's that, they're doing the little division thing, you know, you're going to be going off on one path or the other because they've got roadworks, and they put those great big flashing signs up now. I love it. With the big lorries, with a big arrow going this way, like that, okay? Down here, like that. I'm thinking, I can't drive down there, but I know what you mean, okay? Big arrows. Big flashing arrows. That is John the Baptist. He is a big flashing arrow, like you see on the motorway, basically saying, don't look at me. All I'm doing is telling you where to go. The road sign is not the important bit. What's important is the direction that it sends you. That is John the Baptist. He spent his life pointing others to Jesus. This passage that we look at, John tells us that Jesus is the Son of God. He is the light that is coming into the world, and then immediately goes on and starts to talk about someone who spends his life telling others about that light. And saying what that light had come to do. Temptation is that we look at John as we think that maybe there was something particularly special about him. There was in some degrees. But his birth was pretty special. But you know what? John was just the first. He was the first one who says, this is the light that's come into the world. He wasn't the only one. He starts what gets picked up all the way through the rest of the Gospels. It's not only John that has to tell other people. It's not only John who says, the light has come into the world. Disciples told others about the light. Jesus turns around and says, go make disciples of all men. And he says something really important to the disciples. He says, let your light shine. Let light shine. Jesus turns around to the disciples and says, okay, you've got a role to do. You've got to go out and tell people about the light. Paul and Barnabas, go out and tell the Gentiles. So it's not just the Jews. They start to spread that message out so that other people start to hear about the light. And the early church really got that message. The early church knew that their role was to go out and tell others about the light. And we too need to do that as well. You look at this passage, it talks about Jesus coming into the world as the light, and then it talks about a man who is commissioned to go and tell others about that. And the danger comes is that we look and we just say, well, that's just that bloke. But the Bible makes it clear that's on all of us. Do you remember the story of Gideon? Gideon fighting the Midianites in the Bible. And he gets this army and God says, no, it's too big. And God keeps condensing it down until there's just 300 of them. He gives them trumpets. And he gives them big jars and torches. And at night, they go around the enemy camp with the torches held inside the jars so that nobody could see them. And at a given command, everybody smashes the jar and the torches are held aloft. And suddenly, around that enemy camp, there is an army of light. Every man holding a torch on high. And the Midianites are terrified and are defeated. But every man brings light. Every man is there with the torch in his hand. If we are believers, we are called to stand there and testify to the light and tell others about it. This passage says there was a man. What would it be for us today? There are men. There are men who need to testify and tell about the light. There are women who need to testify and tell about the light. There are young people, older generation, left wing, right wing, center. In terms of your politics, there are confident people and hesitant people. There are extroverts and introverts. All of us are called as believers to go and tell other people about the light, about Jesus coming into the world. In the Greek church, they do a really lovely ceremony at Easter. The whole village gathers around the local church and they're all quite squeezed in and everybody is holding a candle but it's unlit. And the priest opens the door of the church and he comes out with a lit candle from the inside. And this is to signify the message of salvation going out into the world. And so he lights a candle by him, one or two, and they turn round and light the candles behind them. And slowly this wave of light spreads out across the village as they individually light each other's candles and spread that message. We are called to do the same as believers. We're called to do exactly that. Verse 9. The true light that gives light to everyone was coming into the world. It's a real Christmas verse, isn't it? Just see that on the card. Each year, we come together as believers to celebrate that. To celebrate that true light that gives light to everyone. If we're believers, what does that mean for us? Each year we get the opportunity to remind ourselves how Jesus came to reveal, to show us the mess that we were in, but also to bring us salvation, to guide us to God. That's part of what we remember at Christmas, but you know what? There's another bit as well, isn't there, from this passage? And it's this. Remind ourselves to take that good news and to tell others about it. There was a man. There was a man who bore witness to that light and told others. And as believers, we're called to do exactly the same. Have a think. Your friends, your neighbours, those that live around you, those that you know, those at work. Currently, they live in darkness. They may not know it, but that's their state. And this Christmas, we have this opportunity to bear witness to the light. Amen.